Dateline Chicago, Friday, June 17. Hello again. Orion Samuelson, joined later in the program by Max Armstrong and his market guest, back for our weekly look at market activity on Wall Street, Board of Trade, and the Mercantile Exchange. And this week, I don't think anybody was surprised by the lack of action by the Federal Reserve in instituting a hike in the interest rate. Everybody had pretty well decided going into that two-day meeting of the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee that, some saying there might not be an interest rate hike until December. Others saying, it could be July or September. But for the moment, that's out of the picture. As we take a look at where the market ended today, it was down for the day and for the week, dragged down basically by the concern over next week's big activity, and that's the British vote on its membership in the European Union. And for the week, the three major indices all moved lower, and the numbers look like this. The Dow down 1.1%. The S&P lost 1.2%. The NASDAQ fell 1.9% for the week. Problem today was Apple. Apple shares down 2.3%. Apple said its iPhone 6 and 6 Plus were still available for sale in China after Beijing's intellectual property regulators barred sales, saying the designs had infringed a Chinese company's patent. One analyst, Chuck Carlson of Hammond, Indiana, reacted this way. There seems to be this perpetual stream of kind of quasi-negative news surrounding some of the really big market cap stocks, like Apple particularly, and anytime you have Apple misbehaving, that tends to put a damper on the averages. And then fears over Brexit undercut the momentum of the S&P 500 after the benchmark index came within about 12 points of its record closing high last week. But risk appetite has declined because of the vote on the Brexit next Thursday. And still, the polls are on both sides of the issue in whether it'll win or not. And there is major concern in the global community on the possibility that Britain will vote to leave the European Union June 23rd. That's been rattling the global markets now for a week or two, and we could see some heavy trading and increased volatility as investors try to position themselves for next week's referendum on the other side of the Atlantic. Recovering oil prices have helped the U.S. stock market rebound some 14% since mid-February, and we ended the week with oil prices up about 4% for the day today. A weaker dollar, and again, now some less anxiety about Britain's possible exit from the European Union encouraged investors to buy some riskier assets. Brent more than recovered the losses of Thursday when it slid 3.6%, but crude futures still ended the week lower after daily declines from Monday through Thursday. For the week, Brent oil was down 3% and U.S. crude dropped more than 2%. So we ended the day and the week with the U.S. crude up $1.77 to settle at $47.98 a barrel. Brent crude was up 4.2% and ended the day at $49.17 a barrel. One other comment on the Fed. The New York Federal Reserve said today it reduced its forecasts on U.S. economic growth in the second and third quarter, largely due to recent negative data on the domestic manufacturing activities. So the New York Fed is saying gross domestic product is on track to grow now at an annualized pace of 2.1%. That's below the 2.4% rate estimated 2 weeks ago. So what do we look to next week in addition to the vote in Great Britain on the 23rd? Well, on this side of the Atlantic, U.S. Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen will go to Capitol Hill twice, Tuesday before the Senate Banking Committee, and then she will testify on Wednesday before the House Financial Committee. And again, analysts and traders will be watching every word of her testimony before the two committees. The main economic indicators next week include housing data, along with durable goods and consumer sentiment. On Wednesday, the National Association of Realtors will release data on U.S. home resales. And home resales are expected to have risen 1.1% in May, to an annual rate of 5,540,000 units. Data on Thursday also expected to show that new home sales dropped 8% in May to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 565,000 units. And then the durable goods report will come out, because durable goods jumped 3.4% in April because of strong demand for transportation equipment and a range of other products. So on Friday, data expected to show orders for long-lasting U.S. manufactured goods fell 0.5% in May. There will be some earnings reports. Lennar Corporation, the second biggest home builder in the United States, expected to report higher revenue for the second quarter on Tuesday, helped by an increase in home sales. Photoshop maker Adobe Systems expected to report second quarter revenue above expectations, the company benefiting from growth in its marketing cloud business and the continued adoption of its Creative Cloud package of software tools, including Photoshop, Illustrator, and indexing. Then there's Winnebago Industries, the biggest maker of motorhomes in the United States. It's expected to report higher profit and revenue for the third quarter on Wednesday, helped by an increase in sales of its towable units. The company has been facing a labor shortage at its main plant in Forest City, Iowa. It has made a conscious effort to produce more of its cheaper motorhomes as production of larger and higher-end motorhomes is more labor-intensive. And Red Hat Incorporated, the world's largest commercial distributor of the Linux operating system, expected to report an increase in first quarter revenue on Wednesday. Barnes & Noble reports its fourth quarter results on Thursday. Sales at the struggling bookstore chain were helped by the growing popularity of, get this, adult coloring books in the third quarter. And then you remember the name BlackBerry? Well, it's still around. BlackBerry will report its first quarter results on Thursday. And the fate of BlackBerry's loss-making handset business will be in focus as the company's own September deadline for a decision on its future is looming. We did have the big story starting the week that Microsoft would buy LinkedIn. Price was $26.2 billion. It's the largest deal ever for Microsoft. The offer of $196 per share represented a premium of 49.5% to LinkedIn's closing price a week ago today. Talked to one analyst who said, how can that be worth $26.2 billion? Well, we'll find out, won't we? Now we're looking forward to finding out about the commodity world. And, of course, every week Max Armstrong sits down with an analyst and takes a look at weather impact and everything else that's happening in the commodity world. Stay with us for that when we continue on the market sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need, today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
In the studio with us this weekend from AgriVisor, Bloomington, Illinois, Joe Camp. Joe, things have gotten a little more interesting over the past 6 to 8 weeks in the grain market. What are farmers saying to you when they call in the office? Give us an example of what the conversation goes like now, Joe.
What a difference a couple of months make. This spring is almost a mere opposite of what we saw this winter. And so throughout the winter months, the farmer calls certainly were a little bit pessimistic. And in some cases, you know, we'd get the calls and we'd say, oh, this thing's going to continue to go lower. All the analysts think so. It's a bear market. I don't know how we're going to make do this year. Attitudes have certainly changed with this recent rally. If we talk about from the beginning of spring up until now, March 1 to the spring peak for soybeans, $3.50 of gains for futures, about a buck for corn. That's a big difference. And so the attitude a little bit rosier now, no doubt.
And now at this stage, it's all about weather, isn't it?
It is all about weather now that we've got the row crops planted and we're into the growing season. And at the start, you know, we got through planting season really rather well. There were some delays in the east with some wet weather, but the crops are in the ground. And at the start, things look to be going well, although we came into last week and had some concerns about this hot, dry weather that was on the weather maps. We have been hot, but we did get some rains here midweek, and that helped take some pressure off of the market, at least to the upside there. We're going to have to watch, though, going forward. The maps still lean a little bit warm. There's about an equal chance as far as precipitation is concerned for the new long-range maps. And so going forward, we'll keep a close eye on it. And to pair some early season worries with this chatter about La Nina potential, that certainly keeps the speculators a little bit bulled up here regarding weather.
If you look at the weekly drought monitor maps, there are pockets, small ones. There's one along the Michigan-Indiana state line. There's another one in south-central Iowa. There's one down toward southwest Missouri, the west half of South Dakota. That's generally not the crop-producing area, but the Black Hills, I know they're in drought. Really, though, there is not much showing up on the drought monitor map from that standpoint. If you look at that particular barometer, and especially comparing it with what we saw in 2012 when it was all lit up in red.
Right. Those regions you mentioned that have some little pockets of dryness, the drought monitor classifies those as abnormally dry. We don't have in the Corn Belt any areas that have reached that classification, you know, quote unquote, moderate drought yet. But those little pockets can expand, so we'll keep an eye particularly on that little patch there in southeastern Iowa and down in Missouri, because really the heart of the Corn Belt, if that spreads any further and intensifies, we'll have some worry.
The pendulum really swung rather dramatically for some growers. I know, for example, some of my friends in southwestern Indiana who couldn't plant because it was way too wet, and now it's extremely dry for them.
It is. It's a quick turn, but that's spring in the Midwest. That's how it goes. And so because we are leaning a little bit dry now that we've got the crop in, and in some regions there's going to be that concern. But all it takes really for this market to take notice and have a little bit of a change in attitude is just a couple of days of good rains and maybe for that temperature to moderate just a little bit.
And really, if you look at the weekly crop bulletins, there doesn't appear to be much of a problem now.
No, the condition ratings starting out are really phenomenal, but the traders seem to be shrugging that off. Really, we would look at those on a regular basis and probably put a little bit more importance in those numbers than we need to. But this year, that's not the case. We're not so concerned. It's just too early yet to have that data from the crop watchers mean a whole lot. But get a little further into the season, and those will start to play a bigger role.
A few weeks ago, there was a little bit of concern about what the Federal Reserve might do at its June meeting, about whether they would raise interest rates. And then that June employment report came out and seemed to calm those fears a bit. Their meeting turned out to be pretty much a non-event, didn't it, Joe?
That's right. There is some heightened volatility, though, because while there won't be a June rate hike, it's still on the table, and the central bankers are becoming a little bit more hawkish, and they indicate that we could still have two more interest rate hikes, just a quarter of a percent here, but still those would be enough to probably put the bid back under the dollar. We're seeing a little bit of a stronger dollar here in the recent couple of days, and that, broadly speaking, is going to be a negative for the commodity space and grains in particular. That, of course, weighs a little bit on our trade prospects. So that's something we're going to watch really closely.
Crude oil. Talk about the recent movement there and what that means to grains.
That's a big deal, because if we talk about the change in attitude from winter to summer, that plays a big part, because when we were coming in each morning during the winter months, we were seeing crude oil off a dollar or off a dollar 50 and continually making new contract lows. That's not the case. We've rallied back up to the $50 mark. And what that has done is allowed speculators to take on a little bit more of a risk-on attitude, bring some money back into the commodity space, and the grains are benefiting from that. It looks like we're taking the edge a little bit off of that recent oil price rally, because it had been pretty sharp from what was the bottom here this winter. But all things considered, it looks like production certainly is coming down, and demand is really responding to that winter of low prices. So if we have a good summer driving season, we're going to keep oil prices elevated, relatively speaking, and that'll be a friendly driver for commodities and again, the grains included.
Is anybody in the grain trade, Joe, talking about Brexit, that vote of Great Britain on whether or not they want to exit the European community?
We are, because what that means is simply heightened volatility for the outside financial markets, for stocks and bonds and currencies, particularly for currencies. I mentioned the dollar coming up a little bit, first on ideas that we could see an interest rate hike sooner than we anticipated, second on ideas that if the British leave the eurozone, that their pound will drop against the dollar, and that other currencies, the euro, might as well. And so that dollar strength, the prospect for a higher dollar, again, leans negative for commodities, generally speaking.
Talking a little bit about exports, how have they been here of late? As we've watched what's been happening, and especially as prices have rallied, what role have the exports played, if any?
Exports late season have been surprisingly strong and have been much better than we anticipated throughout the winter months. That was part of the doom and gloom, was that demand was weak, and mostly on the part of exports. But exports are coming up, for one, because we have that crop loss in South America. A wet Argentina reduced the size of the soybean crop. A dry Brazil cut second corn crop production. That brings business back to the United States. And late in the season, we're seeing that with the estimates starting to tick up, USDA in the June report upping export targets for both corn and soybeans. So very good strength late in the season has been a price-friendly motivator.
Let's switch gears a little bit to talk about wheat. Reports coming in from the wheat fields of southern Kansas indicate very fine yields, the best in years. A nationwide wheat yield, I believe, on the winter wheat of better than 50 bushels. That's not at all encouraging for the price of wheat, is it?
No, it's not. We wonder, though, if two things can offset the negativity related to yield, and one, that's lower winter wheat acres that were seeded this year, and two, have prices already gone low enough to where buyers are going to step in, both from the commercial side and the speculative side. Certainly with wheat this cheap, we could feed some more of it, maybe even up to 50% more than, say, we had in recent years. That would be a friendly influence for wheat if that were to occur. And then second, maybe a few issues abroad with the European crop coming down a little bit, exports, quality issues in France. The price just being as low as it is and as low as it is relative to corn should beget higher demand going forward. So even though we have a very outstanding yield potential, maybe not overly bearish for prices at this time.
Some of the reports coming in from elevators there tell us the protein content of that wheat is not very good. Test weights have been fantastic. We heard one report better than 66 pounds on a test weight of wheat. Have you been hearing those kinds of reports too, Joe?
Very good reports from the winter wheat harvest, the early start there, especially in the Great Plains, where at the, you know, the start of development, we were worried about dry weather, and all of a sudden they received just an abundance of precipitation that really helped fill that crop out. But with excess water comes some quality issues in some sense. So we'll keep an eye on that as we go through the harvest here.
You mentioned acreage of wheat just a moment or so ago. Are you formulating your ideas already at AgriVisor about corn and bean acres? And are you thinking as high as some people might be, up around 85 million acres on soybeans?
That report is quickly approaching. The June 30th acreage report accompanies the big stocks report, so we're looking out for a very big end of the month, even though we started with a big start of June. We're thinking that corn acres could drop 1 to 1.5 million acres and that soybeans would grow about the same. We're not in the camp that we would see a considerable jump in soybean acres. The idea is that maybe some wet weather in the east had led to some switches. I think the price change came a little bit late. Farmers did want to plant corn, and they did. But the price structure and just some slight weather issues lead us to believe we'll see some sort of switch here, maybe a million to a million and a half.
Joe, it must be a little more fun coming into the office these mornings than it was back in January, as you had to listen to your office mate Dale Durkos grousing some of those mornings.
It's a much more fun trade day when we come in. And again, we don't have this this type of morning where oil can be down $1.50 and equity futures are off 100 points for the Dow, and you know what kind of day it's going to be for the grains. Instead, we're seeing prices rally and hold some strength here and provide producers with some better marketing opportunities than we once had.
It's nice to visit with you again. Thanks for coming our way.
Thanks so much.
Joe Camp with AgriVisor.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need, today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
There was quite an event in Indiana this past week near Rensselaer, well, actually near Fair Oaks. What was a space on Interstate 65 a decade ago is now a huge dairy and hog farm, and it's also a center for educating non-farm people about what it takes to put food on their table. Always delighted to see more and more companies and people getting involved in that education program. And there's no question that Fair Oaks Farm between Chicago and Indianapolis on 65 is doing an excellent job. Well, this week they introduced a crop adventure display. Quite a significant display and investment by several people. And for the grand opening, Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack visited the site, and this was his reaction.
Listen, this is a tremendous new adventure that agriculture is on. Land O'Lakes and the Winfield folks have come together to create this Crop Adventure Center. I've taken a tour of it. I learned a lot as I went through it, and I just got incredibly excited about the opportunity that it will create to partner with what the folks at Fair Oaks have done on the pork and dairy side to educate people who will be traveling here as a destination or just on their way and saying to themselves, I wonder what this is all about. They will learn the incredible story of American agriculture. And this is a huge commitment by Land O'Lakes to invest in this, because I think Chris and the folks at Land O'Lakes genuinely believe this is a story that needs to be told in a way that can speak to the 98-99% of America that does not farm, and the 98% of America that are several generations removed from anyone in their family who was a farmer or who had contact with the land. It's a story that tells the importance of the land and good stewardship. It's a story that tells the need for economic sustainability, and within the Fair Oaks complex, it's a story that also talks about the care and well-being of animals. And I think it presents a more typical view of what American agriculture does and is. than is often portrayed in other venues. And so I'm excited to be here, very appreciative of what Land O'Lakes has done, and really appreciate Chris's leadership because he has been among the most vocal ag leaders on this topic.
Action. Well, there's no question that Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack was very impressed by the new addition to the Fair Oaks Farm in Indiana. As we look at this week's grain market activity, we've pretty well gone over it, but the one thing that Joe Camp and Max didn't talk about, Cuba made its first soybean oil purchase from the U.S. in more than 5 years this month, the latest sign that that drought and heavy rains in South America have tightened supplies. Buyers of soybeans and soy products have increasingly turned to the United States after rains reduced Argentine soy crop quality and stocks ran low in Brazil. In an unusual move, the U.S. sold 7,600 tons of soybean oil to the Caribbean island in the first week of June. While the shipment comprised a small portion of U.S. exports, it was the biggest to Cuba since 2010 and the first since 2011. Last month, Mike Martin, owner of the Martin Rice Company, delivered about 20 tons of Missouri-grown long rice at no cost to Cuba in a gesture of goodwill. That would be the largest shipment of U.S. rice to Cuba since 2008. All of this coming, of course, after President Obama's trip to the island in March. So let's take a look at what the grain market and the livestock market continue to react to. Despite the fact that we're not out of the month of June, weather is a factor. And today, corn futures up nearly 3%, soybeans up more than 2%. Uncertainty about Midwest crop weather, according to analysts. The corn advanced as traders covered short positions ahead of the weekend with the crop approaching its crucial pollination stage in July, and forecasts called for patchy weekend showers in the northwest Midwest, but some areas might not get rain, raising concern about crop stress. So where do we start the week on Monday in the grain trade? July's soybeans will start at $11.59 a bushel after gaining 25 cents a bushel today. July corn will start the week at $4.37¾ after gaining 12½ today. And July wheat will start Monday at $4.81¼ after gaining 8¼ today. That weather rally, as long as I've been watching markets at the Board of Trade, continues to surprise me a little bit being this early in the crop year. Continues to be bad news for cattle people. Feeder cattle futures tumbled to the lowest levels in more than 3 years today because rising corn prices made feeding cattle for slaughter unprofitable, reducing demand. And so live cattle and lean hog futures at the Merck also fell, weighed by technical selling and as retailers had pretty much wrapped up meat purchases ahead of the 4th of July holiday, which is, of course, a popular holiday for outdoor meat grilling. So where do we start the week? Well, it was a red screen today at the Mercantile Exchange. The October lean hog contract will start the week at $74.35 a hundredweight. The August live cattle contract starts the week at $112.50, and the August feeder cattle contract will start the week Monday at $2.45. Cattle market just can't get a break. We're out of time. As always, thank you for joining us. Max Armstrong and I'm Orion Samuelson with you on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.